All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is American Vindicta. Let's just get straight into it. Today is April 12th, 2022. There was reports starting at 8:30 this morning of shots fired in a Brooklyn subway. And we have been getting many conflicting reports about this, which is to be expected. You're always going to get conflicting reports from the initial part of this incident. I've been in communication with some of you through Getter and through email. And this is what I'll say about the misinformation or the miscommunication is that during heightened stress events, when you get that tunnel vision, you get the audio and visual disclusion, you don't see everything, you don't hear everything, and that's because of the sense of emergency. People are going to miss small, fine details. So some of you have been saying that you're seeing reports, and most of this is unverified off the internet reports, that the shooter didn't have a gun. Well, just imagine the gun is something typically about this small and being shot at people. You know, if you're running for your life, you're probably not going to pay attention to it. But if you listen to the videos that are all over the internet right now, you can hear the repetitiveness of the gunfire. Bang, bang, bang. There's another problem with that, especially something that in law enforcement we would teach people, we would teach civilians, that during an active shooter event, that bang, bang, bang you are hearing while people are screaming, most likely is not fireworks, most likely is not two pieces of wood being banged together. That is your mind trying to give you an excuse as to what that is. But most likely it's gunfire. Today, this is what we experience. This is what's happening. So as someone who's, you know, I've given active shooter briefings to federal employees for over 10 years, I would just like to say that, you know, during these events, these mass casualty events, the active shooter events, things can get very much in the gray area. So I would tell you to be looking for factual evidence that's given to you by the NYPD, like we're going to read today, or by the New York Fire Department. It is a rapidly ever-evolving, changing playing field when we talk about active shooters. And I've been waiting for this for a while, not that I want it to happen, but I've been waiting for a big active shooter to happen, or a terroristic-like event. If you ever follow me on the American Vindicta show on the radio side, you'll know that I've been saying this for months, that I'm waiting for big events to start happening, coming to the United States, approaching near summertime, which would draw the attention off of whatever's happening politically. I don't like saying that because, you know, to me, sometimes it feels like a cop-out. Because it feels like I'm not giving precedence to victims, which I'm not doing that. I'm just telling you, as someone who studies this, as someone who has lived in this world before, these type of scenarios and events follow each other. All right. Something politically happens big time, and then something dramatic happens to the civilian populace. What happened yesterday was Joe Biden coming out and talking about a new form of gun ban, I guess you could say, laws that he's going to be coming out with, or regulations for the ATF, along with a new director for the ATF, who is also obviously going to be someone who's not on the Second Amendment supporter side. In this new law, they're going to come after every single type of gun that can be 3D printed. That's their ghost guns. And also they're coming after guns that have had the serial numbers etched off of them, which has been a federal law since the 1960s that you cannot do that to a firearm. So now what they're doing with this whole firearm ghost gun thing is they're going to make it to where every polymer 80 or 80% polymer lower receiver, like what's made for pistols, like the Glock pistol, or like what's made for AR-15s, every single one of those are going to have a serial number. Now, if I'm correct when I say this, I believe AR-15s anyways have to have the serial number on the lower receiver. But mainly they're talking about four pistols. Now, what's funny is that that doesn't cover even a minute amount of crime where criminals have obtained firearms from either just outright buying them or getting them off the black market, off the street, or stealing them from people's homes or from people's vehicles. And there's plenty of evidence out there to back that up. And there's plenty of data out there to back that up. I'll let you do your own research on that. But as law enforcement, as prior law enforcement, I already understand this. I think what we see happening right now with Biden talking about these new gun laws is going to be the precedence for what's coming next with the gun laws. The Democrats for years have been saying that they want to take any type of firearm off the market that they can, that the populace, you and me, the civilians, cannot own. Well, why is that? Well, it's simple. It's simple because if it disarms us, it arms them. That's the way I view it. Because the elite and the politicians will never have their armed security taken away from them. But they want your security to be an armed populace taken away from you. Talk about the Hippocratic Oath now, right? So we could probably expect in the future, based off of when I've talked to, I'm not going to say that, when I've talked to attorneys that may or may not have anything to do with the federal government years ago, when we were all worried about this, whenever the Democrats were pushing it, is, let's say it like this. They're going to come after every type of semi-automatic weapon. So that means pistols, rifles, and shotguns. The only thing that you are going to be limited to is going to be a single shot shotgun, rifle, or pistol. And I believe the pistol can't weigh more than 50 grams, so it can't be a large frame pistol that would then shoot a large caliber round. So that means they're going to do their best to diminish or demolish the ammunition depots out there that's making large caliber rounds. So they'll restrict it. Now, if you ask yourself, are they coming to take the guns? I don't know. I'm just going to straight up tell you, I don't know. I don't see the gun buyback program working. It hasn't worked in any Democratic city that it's been applied to, in any of those people who've gone out there who have actually, you know, given their guns up. What did they get in return? They got higher crime rates. So if you own a weapon, do not turn it in legally. If you legally own a weapon, do not turn it in. Do not fall for that hubris. Secondly, who's coming to take the guns? Is it we, the police, against you, the people? I don't think so. I don't think so because they know that there will be a bloodbath if that happens and that most constitutional sheriffs, which is such an irony to say that, constitutional sheriff, anyone who is a law enforcement officer stands on top of the Constitution for your powers of arrest. So if you go beyond that, you're no longer a constitutional law enforcement officer. That's my perspective. But you have many sheriffs and police captains or supervisors that are out there, police commissioners, who are going to buck the system, not allow it. And I would say, good on you. Don't do it. Don't allow the ATF or the FBI into your county or your city if they come for people's guns. But someone will try it. Some department out there will be stupid enough to go door by door and start to seize weapons. And more than likely, after it starts off on the federal level, the exchange of lawsuits will happen between state attorneys and governors, and then private citizens and private attorneys. And then eventually it'll be brought up to the Supreme Court. And guess who they just nominated to the Supreme Court? One more vote for Biden. One more vote for gun control. One more vote for pedophilia. People have asked me before, I said, hey, Doug, if there was ever a moment in time when the president said, you and your guys are tasked with going and taking guns away from this sector of people, what would you do? I would call in sick. I'd call in sick, right? Outright tell them, no, hell no, I'm not doing it. How many other cops out there right now, though, are willing to go along with it? We saw what we were willing to go along with by enforcing a face mask, or by enforcing the 6 foot distance. I don't want to get into that because YouTube will ban me, and it's more important that this information get out. So I'm going to hold my peace on that part, but you probably know where I'm going. Listen, this is my honest opinion. Law enforcement, we are here for the people, not for the politicians. I've said this to young officers, and I've said this to my peers, but I believe whenever you don the uniform, whenever you put the badge on, when you snap your buckle together and you put your gun belt on, you need to leave your political business back home. You can have conversations with people, I get that, but you should not be acting upon a political decision, nor should we be following the commandments of politicians, like whenever our cities are burning down. That's all we need. Is for another period of riots in law enforcement not doing their job. And we're going to continue to tarnish the badge, and we're going to continue to lose faith in the public. And they're not going to back us up anymore. If anything, they turn them against us more and more. And that's okay, because the government does a great job at turning law enforcement against the public as well. Could you imagine? Let's just say this year, if we started to have active shooters shooting sprees all across the country, would the mayors tell law enforcement to sit this one out? Would the governors not bring in additional law enforcement to help with the deadly situation? Or is it okay for your business, for everything you've worked for, to be burnt up in the ashes? It's okay for that. We'll see. We'll see if lives really matter. I'm going to read to you an article that's from the Epoch Times. If you're not subscribed to the Epoch Times, by the way, I would suggest it. They don't pay me to say that. I just get really good information off of them. So there's a manhunt underway after at least 16 injured in New York and the city shooting. Before I get into this, I've been talking to buddies of mine that are in New York that are canine handlers and such, and people previously that I've known who are, you know, we're cops. We all talk. Even those of us that are prior, you know, not anything that's situational based, or not anything that's sensitive material, but, you know, just the relative information that's being pushed out there. And I've had to do my researching and my digging. And, you know, from the facts that I can gather so far, It was a man on a subway in Brooklyn. The theory right now is that he used a smoke grenade to disperse, I believe, on the train car, pushing the people out, which is a tactic. So what that means is that he was using smoke and the threat of smoke inhalation to funnel a group of people through a portal, all right? So a fatal funnel is what we would call it. Now, the entry and exit portal of the train car, or the door going into the train car, he's funneling people out of that, or funneling people in between the doors of the cars. Very easy. Unfortunately, I would say it's like shooting fish in a barrel. Now, the reports are currently is that the New York Fire Department are treating four gunshot wounds and are treating 8 for other injuries sustained during the incident. Most likely, those injuries are from people who are trying to flee the scene of the shooting. The suspect is described as a black male standing 5'5", who was wearing a MTA, I believe it's a working uniform. I believe it's some sort of coveralls or overalls with a reflective vest, standing 5'5", who donned a gas mask on a subway as the train pulled into the 36th Street station in the borough of Brooklyn. And this is according to police officials. The man then opened a canister, which filled the train with smoke. Soon after, the man opened fire, striking people in the subway and on the platform. The man has a heavy build and was wearing a green construction-type vest and a hooded sweatshirt. New York City Police Commissioner Kachant Sewell told reporters in a press conference outside the station, "It's not clear how many officers are involved in the manhunt. I would assume that, being that it's the New York Police Department, that they are pulling in all local assets to include sheriff's departments, probably also federal assets like the Department of Justice, Marshal Service, and the FBI, Homeland Security, and others, along with the state patrols." Now, New York Governor Kathy Hochul, a Democrat, said she was committing the full resources of our state to fight what she called a surge of crime, referencing the recent shooting of a teenage girl in the city. She called the suspect in Tuesday's attack a cold-hearted and depraved heart. "This individual is still on the loose. The person is dangerous," Hochul said, adding the New Yorkers should be vigilant and alert. The New York Police Department said it had not released any pictures or video footage of the suspect. New Yorkers with information or videos or photographs were encouraged to call Crime Stoppers or the NYPD. New York Mayor Eric Adams, a Democrat and former police officer, issued a video statement since he's quarantining following a recent positive COVID-19 case. He said, "We're praying for all New Yorkers who were injured or affected by today's attack. We will not allow New Yorkers to be terrorized even by a single individual. The NYPD is searching for the suspect at large, and we will find him." Authorities do not know the motive of the suspect at this time and are not ruling anything out. The incident is not being investigated as an act of terrorism. Of the injured, 5 were in critical but stable condition in local hospitals. Some weren't struck by bullets but were injured by smoke inhalation or shrapnel, or were suffering from anxiety. The medical center in NYU and the New York Presbyterian Brooklyn Methodist Hospital has confirmed to news outlets that they are all treating patients from the attack. President Joe Biden was briefed on the latest developments regarding the shooting, and a senior White House staff member were in contact with Adams and Sewell. Now, also during this attack on the subway, were supposedly or reportedly unexploded ordnance, improvised explosive devices. Now, I want to give you my brief summons on this based off of my experience from the Marine Corps, based off my experience as being a 10-year veteran in law enforcement, is that if you see a suspicious package, if it has wires sticking out of it, if it has a wire leading away from it, if it has antennas sticking out of it, that's a good sign that it's not a traditional package. If it's leaking any type of fluid substance, don't pick it up. It could be caustic. If you see a suspicious package, notify the NYPD. Do your best to cordon off the site. Now, depending on the size of the package, would also depend on the blast radius of a detonated device. If it's a small little package, I would stand at least 25 to 50 meters away from it because shrapnel flies fast and it's deadly. Now, if it's a larger device, I would be as far away from that thing behind brick walls as possible because shockwave alone can kill, and then the shrapnel can kill, the concussive blast can kill, but also the secondary and tertiary shrapnel from flying debris and also broken glass from windows can also kill, turning broken glass from windows into flying knives. Remember that there are two different types of devices. You have a command detonated or a command operated device, and then you have a victim activated device. So within these two devices, with a command detonated, typically it is someone who has a remote controlled device, something very similar to what we would see in Iraq. And somebody standing off into a distance, waiting for a crowd of people to come by or for a convoy to go by, whatever it is that is their target. And from there, that's when they explode the device. Typically, that device is also aimed in such a way that if, you know, if the subject or the suspect is coming, if the intended target is moving in this direction, the device will be set up so that the blast and the shrapnel goes towards them, all right? So the other part of that would be the victim operated. Now, the victim operated, and there's another device in here that I just remembered. The victim operated would mean that it's you who activates the device. So it's either by stepping on top of cords that then activate the device, or manipulating the device some way, somehow, and then the device goes off. Okay, we saw that in Austin not too long ago with a person who was sending out pipe bombs and other different types of boxes, I believe from like FedEx and Amazon. You can reference that case for what I'm saying with the victim operated. And then another one would be a timed device, a device that's set on a timer, much like what happened at the Oklahoma City bombing, or like what happened with the drop bag bombs from the Boston bomber incident. With all of these being said, there was also another portion to this. It wasn't just the fact that it was someone who intelligently attacked a unsuspecting crowd. And there was intelligence in doing this. But the laying of devices, multiple devices that were confirmed to be found, even though they were unexploded, thank God, I would tell you that that took planning. If you're going to make bombs, that takes a level of education. And it's not just the random criminal, it's not just the random hoodlum out there that's going to be going through such great detail to disguise themselves and then to use a distractionary device like a smoke bomb that would then funnel people through a train car, getting them into a narrow portal, or what we would call a fatal funnel, for them to have to funnel themselves through slowly and fight over each other to get out, causing that fish in the barrel incident. But the setting of the devices, you know, I mean, how can you not call that a terror attack? The fact that we live in today's day when the most prevalent terrorist attacks happen in New York City, and the most equipped police department in the world for terrorist attacks is also the NYPD and the New York Fire Department. But yet, because of politics, we're not going to call it a terror attack. But you'll call anything that has to do outside of this venue a terror attack. Is it because he's black? Is it because it's Ramadan? Is that why we're not going to call it a terror attack? I'm not blaming it on either. But for people to outright go ahead and say it's not a terror attack, that's deliberately misleading. Okay, so for almost 15 years, everything that happened in America was investigated as a terrorist-related incident if it involved more than two or three people being maimed or killed, especially when pipe bombs are used or any type of explosive device. So understand that there's a sect of people out there that are black nationalists, that are racist, that are also Islamic extremists, that hate America. Okay, those people exist. When I was a federal corrections officer, I talked to them daily. Those people exist. We used to joke around and call it Prizlam because it was this bizarre mixture of Islam and Christianity and then all these radical racist ideas. All right, these people are crazy. They're out there. They're no better than the Nazis. And which Joe Biden funds, by the way. And I see patterns aligning. Yesterday, Biden talks about gun control. 8:38 this morning, an unknown male opens fire on a subway car in Brooklyn, and also uses improvised explosive devices. This is something that you would call a domestic violent extremist, DHS. This is your domestic violent extremist. Not people who were standing on the steps of the Capitol during January 6th, and not, you know, parents who are confronting teachers' unions that are teaching their children about racism and pedophilia, or trying to use transgender ethics to change or subvert their child's mind. We're talking about actual terrorism now, all right? This is stuff that I can actually sit here and talk about. I get so tired of the politics. But once again, terrorism, politics, war, crime, they're all the same thing. They all have something to do with one another. Bad politics, bad policies, from corrupt governments and from corrupt politicians are the reason why New York City, the once greatest city in the world, is today the whore of Babylon, is today what it is. Why is it that here in Texas, we don't have those types of crimes or crime sprees as you do in New York? Why don't we have it in Fort Worth? Dallas is bad enough, okay? But we don't have it like that in Dallas either, or Houston, or Austin, or El Paso, or San Antonio. It's because citizens have guns in Texas. That's why. I would like to say America. Almost did. But there are plenty of states out there where you're not alone. You're not allowed to legally own a firearm to conceal carry within city limits. Or, like if in New Jersey, you're almost not even allowed to own a firearm, which is unconstitutional. And if so, you're allowed this limited scope of what a firearm is. So, here's a policy for you, New York. Start voting conservative. Start voting constitutionally. Stop voting so damn democratically. It's terrible for your city. It's costing people's lives. It's not just costing money. It's costing people's lives now. Could you imagine, just imagine, if New York was allowed the concealed handgun carry for the average person? I'm not talking about the Sean Hannitys who are out there with millions and millions of dollars who can buy their way into owning a firearm. And nothing against Sean Hannity, but the average person can't do it. Not in New York City. Now, imagine the average person with a concealed carry gun who actually trains, who respects law, who's there to protect themselves or perhaps anyone else, the good guy with the gun clause, right? This lunatic pulls his gun out, throws down a smoke grenade, and gets blasted right in the face by the good guy with the gun. You know what just happened? One person was killed or injured during that entire event instead of 16. But instead, as the government works, Operation Knee-Jerk Reaction, I got to make a shirt of that one day, right? Which, by the way, I will be making T-shirts and other things to put on the website. But that's way far and beyond what I want to talk about right now. It takes people dying and being injured for the government to do anything. In law enforcement, we saw it for the longest time. When the Dallas shooting happened, a lot of our guys in our field offices, we didn't have proper body armor. We didn't have ballistic helmets. And what was that, 2016, 2015? And it took the lives being lost by Dallas PD for more tactical teams to be produced and approved, which that takes a long time because there's a lot of bureaucracy just within law enforcement to do that. And then it took even longer for us to get the proper body armor out, right? Wrong. Almost immediately, weeks after the incident in the Dallas shooting, law enforcement was in my department was immediately sent ballistic helmets. And, you know, I'm not going to say how many people in the department, but let's just say 1,000 or more. And we all sat around, we said, wow, that was quick. Too bad you couldn't have got that to us prior to people dying. But no, it took one guy who's out there on our field office who had a helmet, and it was a different colored helmet than what you would be issued. And after the Dallas Five were murdered, and we sent the R2-D2 bot to go and blow this guy up in a garage, what happened was all the pictures were taken, and this one guy that's on our team, it went all the way up to D.C., and D.C. griped and complained and came all the way back down and said, who is that one officer who has this multicam helmet? And we just laughed because, you know, people died. People died. People were being actively shot at by a terrorist, a black supremacist terrorist, by the way. And the only thing you care about was the color of a helmet. That's the politics that we have to deal with. That's the politics we have to deal with. It took us years for our special response team that I was on just to get ballistic shields issued out to us. Years. The government does not work, period. It works slowly. It works backwards. It works to compound everything. It works against common sense. And you're seeing the examples of that now with Joe Biden in office. Just more examples, right? And it was the same way under Trump, same way under Obama, it was the same way under Bush. That's just government in general. We are our own worst enemies. As we're walking, we stick our foot out in front of us and we trip and we fall and we say, damn, why did we do that? And then we blame everyone else around us, but yet it was our own foot. All right, that's how the government works. I'm upset by the loss of life that could have been, I could have been saved had somebody within the New York political realm of just issued out concealed carry permits. But you know what? Instead, what they'll probably do is they'll try their best to put armed security or police officers upon every subway, upon every train car. And they'll do that for a period of weeks, and then they'll have rotations of that. And then it'll be like an off-duty job for officers where you know, pull in some extra money, ride a train car back and forth. And then it'll go away. And then this will happen again. We have the ability and answers, the funding, the manpower, and the technology and the equipment to solve these problems. But it's policies that stop it. Policies. You have people who want to live in this democratic utopia, and at the same time, while they have their bodyguards, while they go to their five-star dinners, while they have their lobster and their steak, you don't. You wear the mask. You don't get the security. You don't get the gun. You deal with the high crime. You deal with the high taxes. You deal with the bullshit that happens in these democratic cities. I've worked in them before. I worked in Camden, New Jersey. I worked in San Antonio. Worked in Fort Worth and Dallas. Worked in Portland. I've worked in parts of San Diego before. You know, all on either permanent details or various operations. You know, I've been around the country, Ferguson, Missouri, Boston. I've been around the country and I've dealt with it. And everywhere I've been, it's democratically controlled cities, towns that have these type of problems. New York, I pray for you. I really do. I pray for your safety. I have good friends of mine that are with DHS, that are in New York, that I do my best to keep covered under prayer. And, you know, I fear for their safety because for the longest time in New York, we had cops that were being assassinated. You have people that, you know, are openly being harassed, maimed, robbed, raped, trafficked, kidnapped, held hostage in New York, and what is the option that you have except to just suffer through it? Most people can't afford to move. And I sit here and I say, hey, if you live in a democratic area, move. Do not stay there. But I understand that some people don't have the financial stability in their life to just pick up and move and find a new job. I get that. I still would do it. I would do whatever I could, especially if I had children, pull them out of those demagogues. Those are cities set up for slaughter. Get them out of there. However, I understand the people who say, no, I was born here. I was raised here. I'll be damned if I leave. I get that. But you're going to have to deal with this for a long time. Democrats are going to ruin everything in this country. From the country to the street that you live on, they're going to ruin everything. I don't have any good answers for you. I just wanted to shoot from the hip here and tell you my heart of how I feel. You know, I am honestly concerned that as this summer heats up, things are going to get worse. We may not have a summer of protests. We may have a summer of violence, epic violence like we haven't seen in a long time. Brace for it. I bet it happens. We still have all the upcoming events with the elections, the midterm elections. That'll bring its own slew of conspiracies and violence because they always follow one another. Russia is apparently it's Mariupol. I can't remember which city it is, but Russia apparently has dispersed chemical munitions in Ukraine. Some of my viewers have sent me that. some of you out there. So I appreciate it. Mike, for one thing, who sent me that. And we'll see what comes of this. I've been saying for a long time, expect something like that to happen, which would draw the United States and would draw NATO in. You know, if the mass casualties, bombing the cities, you know, that hadn't happened. The attack on a nuclear facility, that didn't bring us in. The indiscriminate bombings, that didn't bring us in. You know, eventually there will be something. Eventually there will be an excuse for why we get into Ukraine. And that war in Ukraine will bankrupt us, by the way. If we get into war with Ukraine, expect the U.S. currency to fall. Just expect it. May not be at first, but it will happen. Listen, that's all I've got right now. I'm fixing to start the radio show. So, and by the way, the P.O. Box address for the American Vindictus show is up. It's on the website. Thank you to everyone who sends me some of this fun stuff. And thank you to everyone who donates to this. Thank you to all the sponsors who helped this show still be on the air. If it wasn't for the sponsors, if it wasn't for the donations, I wouldn't be doing this, and I'd be back to another kind of work. So thank you. Also, thank you to Eric for sending me this lovely book about the history of the Marine Corps. It's a heavy book. And everyone stay safe. You know, keep your head on a swivel, 360 degrees of situational awareness. Get in shape. Start training with your weapons. Start praying. Keep prepping. Save up some money. Don't be caught surprised. Thank you to everyone for listening.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
All right, welcome back. This is American Vindictus. So that initial part of the show that you heard will be airing on the YouTube and Rumble platforms of mine. I'm kind of crunching for time, so I'm just going to give you a little bit of information that's out there. Right now I'm going to read an article to you from the Epoch Times. It's the global debt reaching dangerous levels from the International Monetary Fund. It states that the global debt is at such a high level that a worldwide cooperative approach is needed to tackle the danger. According to Vitor Gasper, director of the International Monetary Fund's Fiscal Affairs Department, and Sila Pazarbasilogula, hell, I can't pronounce your name, lady, sorry, the organization's strategy chief. We'll just call her Sila. Data from the IMF Global Debt Database shows that borrowing rose by 28 percentage points and to 258 percentage points of gross domestic product, that's your GDP, in 2020. Now, Gasper and Celia wrote in a IMF blog post on April 11th, which was yesterday, roughly half the debt was accounted for by governments, with households and non-financial corporations making up the rest. Public debt is now roughly 40% of total worldwide debt, the highest level in about 60 years. Debt accumulation and deficits rose at a greater speed during the pandemic than in any early days of the global financial crisis of 2007 and 2009 and the Great Depression. Only a small share of the debt increase was accounted for by developing nations and emerging markets, not including China. But roughly 60% of low-income nations were at risk of distress, says the Post. The IMF predicts debt restructurings to become more frequent. As such, having mechanisms to ensure orderly debt restructuring would be in the best interest of both debtors and creditors. A, quote, global cooperative approach is necessary to make sure there is an orderly resolution of debt problems and unnecessary defaults are avoided. So right there, what comes to mind is debt forgiveness. Not just the college debt forgiveness, but we've talked about the Democrats giving a debt forgiveness for all Americans and restarting. There's no effing way you can do that in our economy from the way it works unless you go to a completely digital currency and you wipe out everything else. But what are the banks going to do about it? What about the debt collection agencies? You know, is everyone just going to agree, okay, we're going to lose potentially millions or billions of dollars of debt. You know, the government will give us accredited points and then we'll just, you know, restart this entire thing. I don't know. But if you had to do a building back better, that might be part of it, wouldn't it? So let's continue. The rise in energy and food prices is adding more pressure on poor and vulnerable nations. Food makes up 60% of household consumption in low-income nations. Moreover, emerging and low-income nations face persistent revenue and GDP losses. In advanced economies, the IMF expects spending, revenues, primary balance, and economic activity to return to near pre-pandemic levels by 2024. Oh, what an interesting year to say that. What have I been talking about that's going to happen by 2024? I think but by 2024, we're going to be in a third world war, or the cusp of that. And we're going to have a new elected leader who's going to see the potentiality, not saying it's going to happen, I don't want it to happen, but the potentiality of a civil war in America, or the beginnings of that. And a third world war. All right, that's my predictions. Pray I'm wrong. I pray that I'm wrong. It's just a hunch. All right. However, there has been a significant increase in the number of advanced economies with debt ratios exceeding their economic size, states the IMF. Due to the rising inflation, central banks around the world are raising interest rates to contain price hikes, which can end up tightening global financial conditions, states the agency. In January 2022, during the virtual Davos Agenda, an online version of the annual World Economic Forum conference in Davos, Switzerland, IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva, whatever, warned that interest rate hikes by the U.S. Federal Reserve could throw cold water, quote, on the economic recoveries of certain nations that carry high levels of dollar-denominated debts. Considering risks such as the COVID-19 pandemic, high debt levels, and surging inflation, Georgieva predicted that 2022 would be like navigating an obstacle course. She pointed out that the problem of inflation is unique to each nation. Quote, the country specificity is what makes 2022, in a way, even more difficult than in 2020. In 2020, We had similar policies everywhere because we were fighting the same problem, an economy in standstill. In 2022, though, conditions in countries are very different, so we cannot anymore have the same policy everywhere. It has to be country-specific, and that makes our job in 2022 so much more complicated. And I don't want to do it, but I can pull up article after article of economists that are telling you the dollar's in trouble, that are telling you global debt is going to be a real thing that we're all going to have to face. It's right there in your face, ladies and gentlemen. Do your own research, please. You know, don't believe every single word I say or every single thing from the Epoch Times. Do your own research. Educate yourself upon these problems that are happening worldwide. Right now, do a little bit of Russia and Ukraine. We only have a couple minutes left. The Russian President Vladimir Putin Tuesday clarified his stance on Crimea and Donbas, the disputed territories on the Russia-Ukraine border area. He appears to be unhappy with Ukraine's ambiguous stance on the separatists or disputed territories, and clearly stated that Russia is demanding Ukraine recognize Crimea as Russian and so-called Donbas republics as independent. Putin emphasized that two points are the key topics that the two sides have made no progress on. The ceasefire talks returned to a deadlock, he stated, in Russia's Far East Cosmodrome. Now, ceasefire talks have apparently slowed down as Russia and Ukraine get to the heart of the matter, which are territory disputes. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has acknowledged in early April that the intention of Russia's military operation is to occupy the corridor that is connecting Crimea and the Donbas region, with Mariupol being a key city along this corridor. Now, Donbas in the south of Ukraine and the corridor to Crimea and the Kherson region and the Zaporizhzhia region. And he said that we basically understand what they're doing. He also told Ukrainian media that it could cost thousands of soldiers' lives to take back Donbas and Crimea. Ukraine could also end up unable to take back those areas militarily, Zelensky said. He said, Russia has its own vision of Donbas and Ukraine has its own. So I had a simple suggestion. I believe that we will not be able to agree on all points at once. This is impossible, even if we have negotiations. However, the former Soviet country insisted on setting aside the disputed areas and ongoing potential ceasefire deal and demanded more time to solve it through negotiations. Overall, we're not ready to give away our country, says Zelensky. I think we already gave up a lot of lives. He responded when he was asked if he's willing to give up any part of Ukraine for peace, and he said, so we need to stay firm for as long as we can, but this is life. Different things happen. We understand the Russian side. We understand one of their provisions that is always talked about is to recognize Crimea as Russian territory. I will definitely not recognize that. He also added, and they would really like to take the southern parts of our country. But we were not ready to give up our territory from the beginning. And had we been willing to give up our territory, there would be no war. Ukraine is planning for a victory. I understand they will not withdraw from Crimea and will be arguing or negotiating one territory or another in the south of our country, the Donbas region. I know exactly what has to happen, after which we can say this is victory for Ukraine. Now, take that into consideration with things that are being spoken about across the internet right now with the potentiality of Russia using chemical weapons in Ukraine. And I believe it's the Mariupol area, at least within the Donbas region. So that gives the potential foothold for NATO to come in. Now, don't believe what they say, all right? Just because NATO and the U.S. has been saying we don't want to get into this this conflict, don't believe everything that you hear. There are always strategic and monetary reasons as to why we want to put ourselves in every single nation in the world. You know, that just is what it is. So, brace for impact on that. Ladies and gentlemen, things are getting a little bit heated out there. Things are getting worse. Thoughts and prayers go out to the families and the victims of the attack at the subway in Brooklyn today. Do your best to vote for the right people so that you can put your lives back in your own hands, New Yorkers. Put the guns back in your hands so that you can defend yourself and the innocent people that are out there. That's how we make America stronger. By encouraging every single civilian, by arming every single civilian legally, keeping them trained. You know, this is the standpoint of our nation that makes us different from everywhere else. If we go down this rabbit hole of taking guns away from our citizens, then we become China very quickly. We become Canada overnight. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you for your donations. Thank you for your thoughts and prayers on this show. Thank you for your emails. I read every one of them. I do my best to answer to them. Thank you for your support. If you like this show, please spread it with your friends, with your family. My name's Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. I'm out. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.